And now, our feature presentation.
I like it spooky.
Hey, everybody, welcome to I Like It Spooky Horror Podcast. I'm Brian.
I am Clint, and last episode, we stayed up to watch The Late Show and discussed Late Night with the Devil. This episode, we're going to change the channel to one of our favorite game shows, The Running Man. But before we offer our color commentary, let's get to some news.
So actually, I have a couple news stories, and one's just a quick blurb. I'm out of breath from running from these damn people. Daniel Roebuck has joined the cast of Terrifier 3. Now, Daniel seems excited about this. What do you think? I mean, it's fine.
I'm a Daniel Roebuck fan. Anything that he's in, just the fact that he's in it enhances that project.
I mean, I hope it's better than the second one. I was not a fan of the second one. I know some of our friends love the second one, but I like the first one a lot better, but maybe they reel it back in a little bit.
Bottom line, I'm excited that Daniel Roebuck's going to be a part of it. I'm going to go to the theater to see this regardless.
Do you think it'll get a wide release?
Yes. I think it's got a huge enough following now, a big enough following where, I mean, look at what Screamer's Costumes did last year with David Howard Thornton, you know, Art the Clown there. And I know that's just, they tour all the big cons around the country, a huge following. This is going to get a big theatrical release. And if I remember with our early reportings of Terrifier 3, because we've been talking about this for a while now, about a year maybe, I think they finally got like that big budget to work with.
I'm trying to see if there's a date announced yet. Christmas maybe?
No, I thought it comes out in October. I thought like October 14th or something like that.
We'll go check it out. A Christmas movie in October. And then a little shout out to our year in review, because Bloody Disgusting has a 12 movies you don't want to miss in spring of 2024. So there's, I mean, several movies on this list that I'm like, oh, the first one, the one that has me most excited is In a Violent Nature, and that's May 31st. Hopefully everybody's kind of stumbled on this one. It's from IFC Films, so not a big studio, but I mean, they just put out Late Night with the Devil. I think we both enjoyed that.
A damn good movie.
You got the new M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Watchers on June 14th, The Strangers Chapter 1 on May 17th, the new A24, I saw the TV Glow on May 3rd, Infested April 26th, of course, Late Night with the Devils on April 19th on Shudder, so it's already out in theaters, but it's on Shudder. You seen that one, Late Night with the Devil?
Yeah, I know that you just celebrated a birthday, so you're getting older, so your memory's not what it used to be, but we actually covered that in the last episode.
And April 19th, Abigail. So, I mean, you might have already watched this by the time you listen to this. I think this is one Clint's really excited for.
It is. I'm actually glad you brought it up because on the last episode, Late Night with the Devil, I talked about it a couple times and my dumbass said Annabelle.
Yeah, I was listening to the show and I was like, oh, it's Abigail.
Yep, I'm an idiot, but it is Abigail.
And then one I'm excited to see, Sting, which is already out. I haven't seen it yet, but it's a big spider with lots of practical effects. So I'm excited for that one.
Can't go wrong with that.
And then my last bit of news is about Lumberjack the Monster.
Oh!
Yeah, not that Lumberjack the Monster, but yeah.
Oh.
Takashi Miike's serial killer versus psychopath thriller heads to Netflix this summer.
Anything new coming to Netflix and it's horror, hopefully it's decent because Netflix horror selection has always been fucking abysmal.
The one thing that has me excited about this is the film's official site explains a series of bizarre murders in which people wear a monster mask from the picture book Monster Woodcutter and steal their brains with an axe. I mean, that sounds fun.
I mean, if it has something to do with monster masks, you know, Aaliyah from Pure Macabre, she'll probably be interested to see it.
So, and if it's a, did you ever see I Saw the Devil? Japanese film, I believe, or Korean. It's about a serial killer and a cop, and this police officer catches this killer, tortures him, lets him go. He kills more people, he tortures, catches him again, tortures him, lets him go. Like, so it's just a...
I have seen bits of that, yep.
I enjoy the movie, but it's a weird premise, you know, of just like people being tortured And then eventually I think the killer gets to the guy's family. When Netflix does horror, I'm not like, oh, first in line for it. It's Netflix. They're not known for their horror.
No, probably the best thing that I've seen them put out was the Wednesday series.
Yeah, and that's pretty kid-friendly, family-friendly.
But other than that, I mean, I'm just watching it for Castlevania, which is horror, He-Man Masters of the Universe, Car Masters, and Cobra Kai.
I don't even know why we have Netflix anymore. Oh, Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah, there's that too.
Yeah, we just happen to keep it all here because we did watch Goosebumps last night on it. And we'll probably watch Goosebumps 2 this tonight or, you know, this week. So there's that, but I don't know.
I'm going to cancel all my streaming services and just stick with Tubi and Crackle and Redbox. I utilized Pluto TV last night, which I don't do a whole lot, and I was pretty happy with that.
What do you have for news? Anything exciting?
I have something exciting for news, and it just so happens that it coincides with this episode and what we are talking about. My news is about, yes, another remake. I wish to God they would just come up with original ideas. But according to an article from Fangoria.com, Edgar Wright is writing and directing a new adaptation of Stephen King's The Running Man. And it's going to star Glenn Powell from Anyone But You. I don't know who that is. He is set to lead the dystopian thriller. So he's going to take over for Arnold as Ben Richards. It looks like this is going to be from Paramount. I think the other thing that has me interested in this is, according to this article, it's going to stay true to Richard Bachman's, a.k.a. Stephen King's, novel, where The Running Man from 1987 that we all know and love and we're going to talk about here in just a little bit, just kind of took some basic principles and went in their own direction, so to speak. They went into their own quad with it. You know, I'm curious because the 1987 Running Man was fun. It was 80s. It was pro wrestling. It was pop culture. It was almost video game. Stephen King is obviously horror, but if you've read a Stephen King novel, he goes on and on like I do when I get on a tangent, and he just explains everything, and it's kind of slow. If the remake is going to stay true to the novel, is it going to be more serious?
Have you read the book?
I have not read the book. It's actually one of those things I've always wanted to do, and I enjoy Stephen King, but again, it's just, he's, you know, six pages are describing the blades of grass outside of Salem's lot as Ben drives up in his Jeep, you know, and it's like, oh, God.
When we talked about this article, I was looking at the book, and it's 101 chapters long, I think. Whew. And then I read like the synopsis, the first little bit of what the movie was about, and I was like, oh, this does not sound like a fun movie. You know, if they stick to the premise of the movie or the book, you know, Ben Richards has been blacklisted from his work. His wife's doing prostitution because they have no money. His child needs medicine for treatments that he can't afford, is going to die. So he goes on this show, and I'm like, I'll stick with the Arnold one.
Yeah, it's more bleak. In this Fangoria article, it does say, if you want more of an insight into the novel, don't forget to check out Fangoria's very own The King Cast. Discuss it with the fellows of Radio Silence. And I'm going to click on this link. And it's fangoria.com/podcast/the-kingcast. And then, you know, you can scroll through and find The Running Man with Radio Silence. So that'll give you, if you want something to listen to as opposed to reading 101 chapters, it'll give you some more insight into the original novel.
I think I might go on The Running Man over reading the book.
It's such a damn good movie. I don't want to read a bleak book. I want the fun.
I mean, if we went on The Running Man, though, we might be able to win some money.
Money's good. Isn't that kind of like Squid Games? Or no, in Running Man, do you remember the other little commercial for the other little, the climbing for dollars with the...
And now, back to climbing for dollars.
And then, of course, he gets to the top and gets blasted. I'll climb for dollars because you're right. I don't have any money. I need some.
So on this episode of Wire Report, we went to Michigan, or not Michigan, Kansas City. I am getting old. See, I didn't even know where the hell we went. So we found one of the few remaining FYEs because you had said that the one by you closed.
Yeah.
And then I found out that the one by me about an hour away in Peoria closed. So they're getting few and far between.
That's what I was talking about last episode, man. Everybody's closing up shop.
So one of the things I did pick up is Mothra.
1, 2, and 3.
And I only bought this because it's out of print. So why not have two copies? Then the next movie I bought, Eraserhead Criterion Collection. It was on sale for $20. So I picked that up. And then we did a Half Price Books trip. And we found The Haunted Castle. And I had never heard of this, but Tiffany stumbled on this. And it looks interesting. Looks like it might be, I mean, it's PG, so it might look, you know, be family friendly.
It looks kind of medievalish or very like early Dracula type stuff. Gothic.
Yeah, maybe set in the 50s or 60s. Then we went to Panic Fest. Finley and I went to Panic Fest and met Joe Lynch, and Darcy got to give Finley a hug. Joe Bob wasn't able to make it. But Joe Lynch was super nice. He came over and talked to us for like 10 minutes after the show and took some pictures with Finley and talked to me about movies and stuff. They had some mystery boxes.
They Watch and Panic Fest 2024.
So there's just stickers and magnets and all kinds of stuff in here.
Some swag.
Beetlejuice cards, skeleton cards, Ah Real Monsters cards. And then each one comes with an autograph. There was a John Patta, who I guess is the director of Black Mold.
Oh, okay.
And then this is the fun one. Meat Friend. Which is from a short that I've seen. And it says USA, USA, USA. I think this lady that directed Meat Friend has something to do with the Sting movie. So I need to look into that. We bought two because I got the first one and I didn't really buy anything else there. So I was like, let's go grab another one, Finley. And she's like showing people, look at my autographs I got. Look, look.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
So she's like showing everybody that was there her little autographs. And we had fun.
How was it seeing Night of the Comet there? Did they have any of the cast there?
No, they just had Joe Lynch and Darcy there. And they talked for a little bit. And Joe Bob came on and did a little video from home explaining the movie like he would on the TV show. And then they asked, you know, had a couple of questions after the movie. And we were in the front row because there was two seats right in the front row of the theater because they have couches and stuff. And the celebrities sit up front. And I, Finley, you're going to raise your hand? So we raised our hand and people were all pointing at her. And I said, she just wants to know if she can come give Darcy a hug. So, you know, she ran up there and gave her a hug. And Joe Lynch was like, can I get a hug? And she just like ran back to her seat. Yeah. But no, he came over and talked to us afterwards and took some pictures with us, with Finley. It was fun. And then we walked back and got Sonic and went back home, or back to the, you know, the room.
You know, hopefully with all this exposure that you, all these experiences that you expose Finley to, that she is going to wind up becoming some famous icon in horror someday, so that this show and you and I can finally get the love that we deserve.
Well, next weekend we're going to AEW in Peoria.
Mm.
It was $30 a ticket, and I was like, it's a smaller show, so I want to take her to that and see how she does with it, and if she does well with that, then maybe we'll go to some more AEW or some WWE stuff, you know, just kind of see how she does with it.
Nice.
Shoot, maybe, you know, within a couple of years, we'll be taking her to Flashback, you know, or something like that. I mean, I guess she did come to Nightmares last year.
She came to Nightmares, and she did fine. Her and I were running around playing with the kangaroos. It only cost me another kangaroo.
Another baby kangaroo.
She's going to Flashback, though. She better hang at the bar late at night, I'm telling you.
I got this from being a Patreon of the Last Drive-In. It says blood, breasts, and beasts.
That's your work bag now, right?
I don't know if it'll hold all my work stuff. It could be. I don't know what I'll put it. That's like a record store kind of thing, you know, like when you're going to the movie store, the record store.
That's a convention bag right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When you go buy all the stuff that you're going to give me, you just put in that bag. And at the end of the show, you just hand it all to me.
Yeah, I'm sure I got other stuff, but hell, I don't know.
Well, speaking of buying me stuff, I bought you something. You're old now, so you probably already forgot. Of course, you don't have it in your hands yet either. But so on the last episode of Mishmash, Leah touched on, I forget the actual title of it, but it was a music show at Weber's Inn, you know, just outside of Ann Arbor, Michigan. I took the girls. It was a great time. And it's funny, I wanted to comment on the fact that your FYEs are closing down, your conglomerates are consolidating, but there was a lot of people at this show and there was a lot of money flowing around. But this place was great. You walk in, and of course, it was mainly records, but it was just a music lover's paradise. And I, for Brian, picked up for his birthday a Godzilla soundtrack. And I got this from my friend Casey, who does rock and rummage and travels to a bunch of shows. Got a hold of Brian and took a picture. I said, hey, do you have this? He said, nope. I said, well, you do now. Happy birthday.
When I had asked you if you needed a copy of Shock Treatment.
Yeah.
And you're like, nah, I bought it anyway. What the fuck?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, because I don't think the Shock Treatment was that much, but
It was $6. Yeah. I was like, for $6, hell, I'll find something to do with it.
Why not? Yeah, I just remember I was busting your and Jason balls on some whatever random past episode where you're like, I got you this. I was like, well, fucking no one got me anything, bastards. I want a Shock Treatment record.
I don't even know if it's a good soundtrack or not, but
there's a couple songs. I actually have one or two of their songs in my playlist. Yep. Got the oldest a couple records, took the youngest, got her a couple. She actually got 3 records because hers were all cheaper. And then we took, I say youngest, Boots. Everybody knows her as Boots. We also took Boots' friend with us, who doesn't really listen to music, doesn't have a record player, but we took her with us anyway, and she picked up a record to some musical that she enjoys. She goes, oh, I like this movie. And a couple of cool things, takeaways from that show is, especially with Boots and her friend, I said, I know you guys don't really know what you listen to. You know, they're 12, 13. Well, they're both 13, I think. You're looking through trying to figure out your musical taste. I was like, go on a journey. I was like, if you can't figure out what you want, pick something based off the album cover art that catches your eye and just get it and go exploring. And it can open your door, you know, open doors to something you've never listened to in this whole new universe, or it could suck and you just throw it against the fucking wall. You know what I mean? Either way, you win. So Boots got this weird ass something from the 70s that had like a wizard and something else on there. And it didn't look like Black Sabbath type kind of 70s trippy music. You know, she listened to it and said she liked it. I still haven't listened to it. I need to check it out. So it was cool. They took my advice and they just went exploring and they just found and gravitated towards some random shit. I stumbled across this right here. Drop Dead, An Exercise in Horror from Arch Obler, which I've talked about Arch quite a bit. For those of you who don't know who Arch Obler is, he was responsible for Lights Out, which was the old-time horror radio show back in the 30s and 40s, I believe based out of Chicago. I stumbled across Lights Out on YouTube one time, and it's all these old-time Twilight Zone-style shows. Some are kind of sci-fi, some are scary as hell, some are just kind of fun and whimsical. Our friend Brian Hoover loves Lights Out. But the coolest part is like, I came across, I'm just flipping through and I see this record and my face lit up and I was like, oh my God. And I looked at the older gentleman who was vending this particular booth and his face lit up and we're just sitting there smiling at each other. We shared this moment. It was almost like he was like, oh my God, there's a fan of Lights Out. And I'm like, oh my God, this cool guy's got Lights Out. So we were two people appreciating the product. Picked up the record. It was $12. Great find. How do you not?
You didn't say anything to him?
No, we were speechless. It was like that thing where I've seen the video before where it's like two metalheads are grocery shopping and one's got an Iron Maiden shirt on, one's got like a Pantera shirt on. They look over at each other and then they daydream that they're dancing through the field, you know, like, oh, I found a friend. And that's like, it's kind of like the moment I shared with this guy. It was fun.
You just handed him $12 and said thanks and left.
Yeah, I think I said something like, this is so cool that you have this. And he mumbled something, but we didn't have to say anything. Our eyes said it all.
Oh, Lord. So you spent a lot of money this episode.
I actually did, yeah, because, of course, the oldest, she has expensive taste. So, I mean, both her records cost quite a bit. I don't remember the tally. Probably a couple $100, you know. But part of that, the whole reason we went to the music show anyway was back to the FYE closing thing for Easter when I was putting the girls' Easter baskets together. I wanted to get them each a record. So I went to FYE. They're closed. And then I went to Walmart and Target. And at least where I'm at, their record selections are just stupid. It's just like a bunch of junk that they kind of throw on the shelves. You might find something decent, but I actually took cash and then wrote a note on it and said, record, I'll explain later, and put those in their Easter basket. And I was going to take them on a trip to Weirdsville Records. But then this music show popped up. Thanks, you know, Leah reported on it. And I was like, that's it. We're going to go. And I'm glad we did. And I also, they had a bunch of flyers and I found a whole bunch of other music shows that are going on the rest of the year in Toledo, Ohio, and other places in Michigan. So in the vicinity. So we're going to hit some more.
The cool thing about these shows is you can go to them and you can find something like that for $12. When you walk in a Walmart or a Target, you're not getting out of there with a record for under $25, $30, $40. And that's brand new stuff. I mean, some of it, like you said, I went to Target last week and found the soundtrack to Wish for Finley, a Disney movie, for $8 on clearance. But everything else they had there was, I mean, there's a vinyl there from, it's been sitting on the shelf for 8 months. It's a Peanuts Christmas vinyl. It's $30 for one record. And I'm like, this is not new. This is not, it's a re-release that's been re-released 50 times. Why is it still $30.
You're never going to find an Arch Obler Lights Out record at Target. There was an $800 Pearl Jam, rare Pearl Jam record, you know what I mean? Which I didn't have any interest in buying, but you're never going to find that rare Pearl Jam album. And then the other great part about going to these music shows, it's no different than horror conventions. You are supporting small, independent, local record shops, collectors, vendors, real people. Again, I'm not against corporations, you know what I mean? But it's always cool when you can find a better selection and spend your money with someone like inkmirrors.com. Ding. Cheap plug.
I think they're going out soon to sell some shit.
Here pretty soon. I've heard that they're going to be hitting the road with a limited run, a limited convention run this year.
Oh, sounds like they need some money.
They need some money. The show needs some money, too. Maybe we could find a sponsor.
Hey, maybe.
The global community for podcasts, Good Pods, is a fast-growing, award-winning free podcast player and discovery app where you can listen to, discover, and share all your favorite podcasts and shows. Available on iPhone and Android app stores or at goodpods.com, it is the place to follow your friends, discover new podcasts, track your podcast listens, and bookmark new podcasts for later. Sign up today for your free account at goodpods.com.
So now that we've heard from our sponsor, it's time for the movie, the 1987 science fiction horror? I mean, this is one of those that we've talked about a lot that skirts along that line of horror, science fiction, action. I mean, it has a lot of great action. It's got some dark comedy in it, too. Some of those one-liners are great. You know what it is?
It's
in the dystopian future.
The dystopian future. I'm getting old, too. I forgot. Oh, we're talking about The Running Man. Yeah, that's right.
In the year 2017, an innocent man accused of a crime has a choice. Hard time or prime time?
Sensational. Perfect contestant. I want him.
He must pay or play the running man.
On your mark.
I'll be back.
No, it's funny because you talk about how it skirts on horror. So since this had Arnold in it, Arnold Schwarzenegger, then it just kind of automatically gets lumped into an action film. But if this didn't have Arnold and it was directed by, say, John Carpenter, but it was the same exact fucking film, then it would have been labeled horror. And it would have a really cool line of stalker toys today. And then I would really be poor.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
I would gobble all of that up.
And the little car the dynamo's in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rip off from Knight Rider with the kit light going back and forth in the front.
That have the hockey, like the guy with the hockey stuff, and he'd have a little goal there. Oh, man.
I can't believe no one's done it yet. And maybe with the remake coming, maybe that'll happen. But early on in The Running Man, Arnold proves that beards are sexy. Yeah.
Then he shaves the damn thing. I was like, oh, I guess he had to, you know, become Arnold and change what he looks like.
Well, yeah, because he escaped from prison. And that's something I love about this film, too, is you get the grit, you get the gore early on. You get the head explosion, kind of almost scanner style, very bloody, chunky. You get to see it's a quick snippet, quick clip, but you get to see it. Visually, the tone of this movie is set right off the fucking bat.
So if you've never seen The Running Man, first off, what the fuck are you doing? Why haven't you? Who hurt you, like, in your life?
And after you watch The Running Man for the first time, if you haven't seen it, you're going to realize, oh, shit, we're basically living in The Running Man right now.
In the movie, it's 2017. The rich are rich and the poor are super poor. There's this huge divide. You know, rich people live in big penthouses and big buildings and poor people live on the streets. There's no food. There's no water. Government runs everything. Everything's censored. TV censored, music censored. I mean, at one point, once Ben gets out of prison, he goes back to where he lives and he has this young lady and he's pulling out tapes. Oh, this is censored and this is censored and this is censored. And these clothes are off market. They're censored. Everything's censored. And the government controls everything. They control all the media so they can change whatever you see. I mean, did we really watch The Running Man on Pluto TV? Or we just think we watched The Running Man on Pluto TV?
Now we're kind of getting into Matrix territory. This is a fun movie, and I've got a lot of fun things to talk about it, but I guess I'll get the serious stuff out of the way. And this movie kind of, it reminded me of Star Trek in the regard of those early episodes of Star Trek kind of influenced technology today. you know, you can look back and watch and go, oh, we have that now. We have that now. And there was a lot of fucking foreshadowing in this movie. Simple things like digital video. Digital video, if it was around, it was very early on in 1987. At least it wasn't available, you know, to the public like it is now. Fight me, argue me if you want to, but there's a lot of narrative focused news reporting, which I feel whatever side you want to be on, that either side, that's what we live in now. All the censoring, all the cancel culture type stuff. Ridiculously priced soda pop. Do you remember she was at the vending machine? It was like $7.50 or whatever the hell it was for a can of fucking pop.
I think it was $6 and something, but yeah, like Jesus.
And something that really stuck out to me is this movie had to have been the birth of Alexa. Because in 1987, all you had was the clap on the clapper.
Clap on, clap off the clapper.
You didn't have where you could walk into a room and say, lights on, brew coffee. And we have that now. So there's a lot of foreshadowing in this movie.
So the movie had a $32 million budget. I don't know if you had that in your notes. Yeah, $32 million and made $38.1 million. So
I saw $27 million, but regardless, it didn't make a ton of money.
It made some money, but not a lot of money. But you had said that about the horror thing, that it's kind of that horror, but not horror. And if it had a different name as a director, it would be considered a horror. I saw the other day someone was listing their top five horror movies, and Terminator was in their top five. And I was like, yeah, I never thought of it that way. Like, I never thought of Terminator because it has Arnold and it's action as a horror film.
And back when McFarlane did McFarlane Monsters, Movie Maniacs, now he's kind of segued and you get the weird other stuff in there. Back when it started, Terminator was included in that lineup. You had a couple Terminator figures. Yeah, it's always kind of in the vein. Brian Clark talked about it when we were discussing, I think when we discussed Son of Godzilla, we were talking a little bit about green slime and we were talking about horror that's not horror. And he said something to the effect of horror always exists when you're talking about dystopian future. The Running Man and Terminator both have that grit to them, that grime that you want to shower when you're done watching it, that just down in the dirt, blood and guts, which I really think make them horror.
Yeah, and the body count for this would be astronomical because, I mean, they're killing people left and right when they're escaping from prison. I mean, and then he kills a couple people at the quote-unquote airport. You know, he killed a couple people at the airport.
It was bloody.
Well, it wasn't, but then when it was on TV, you know, the ticket agent and the baggage lady or whatever, they show it when he gets to the show or when he's escaped and they capture him again. You know, they're like, oh, the lady that he had kidnapped or held hostage was like, that's not what happened. So she's starting to see some of the stuff that the government's putting out that's not true.
So the other part of The Running Man that I think helps anchor it in the horror genre, I kind of feel like this is a widely known fact, but if you don't know, the original novel was penned by Richard Bachman, which is Stephen King's pseudonym. So this story originates from Stephen King, and Stephen King is nothing but horror.
I wondered why he didn't. Was that just a thing he was going through, that he was like, I'm going to write these books because it is a collection of stories?
I don't know. I don't know if it's because it did kind of exist sort of outside the horror realm. So maybe that's why he was like, I don't want to Stephen King it. And then it's going to get, you know, pigeonholed into a certain genre. I know there were a lot of stories that he wrote, like we talked about with Maximum Overdrive, that he just wasn't happy with, which I think he's insane. So is that why? You know, I don't know for sure. I know one thing about this movie is it comes from TriStar. Brian, I don't know how you feel, but it feels like a canon movie to me.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a canon action. The movie after on Pluto TV that it went right into was Universal Soldier. And again, that feels, I'm not sure if that's a canon film. I don't think it is.
No, I thought that was Universal Pictures.
That feels like a canon film. So I'm waiting for like American Ninja 3 to come on after Universal Soldier or something right. Like that.
I forget when canon dissolved. I wonder if maybe that's what happened, is people who worked for Canon went to these other production companies and carried that style with them, and it kind of bled in.
It's a fun 80s action / horror sci-fi movie. I mean, I had fun with it, and I talk about comfort movies a lot. This is definitely a nostalgia comfort movie from the 80s.
It's a well thought out film, and it's packed solid with details. And I always called them throughouts, like just things that they revisit. And it all ties together in this beautiful package. But there are so many little details. Just for example, like I was talking about foreshadowing earlier, when early on in the movie, when they're on the shuttle bus going to the airport, one of the background actors had these sunglasses on with this little red dot blink Blink and like what we have now, where you can wear glasses with cameras in them where you record things, kind of James Bond style. The whole film was just the little line, the little bit of dialogue about the how expensive the can of pop was from the vending machine, just top to bottom, everywhere in between, this movie is filled and solid.
I would imagine this has got to be one of Arnold's, besides the Terminator, parts that he speaks the least. He doesn't really say much. There's a lot of one-liners, but I noticed that throughout the movie. There's, I'll be back, I'll see you again. What's he say about Sub-Zero?
Plain Zero. Now he's Plain Zero, and I'm like, that's so lame.
Ben Richards is put in prison. They escape prison, but they can't escape because they have these things around their neck that blow their heads off. One of the prisoners gets out before they can escape. Then he's captured again, and he's put on this TV show with Richard Dawson from Family Feud. I can't remember what his name was in the movie.
Jack Killian.
But he wants Ben Richards. They don't usually allow them to have federal prisoners, but he pulls some strings and he gets them.
Yeah, he talks to the Justice Department Entertainment Division and says, I need to speak to the president's agent, please. Hold on, I got to cut you off, because did you see before he got Ben on the show, they were looking through like a list of quote unquote criminals, and almost all these people are probably innocent and framed. You know what I mean? And they were considering there was a toddler and the toddler had done something wrong. And Jack Killian's like, are you serious? And I'm watching that. All I could think of is like, oh, you know, that'd have been cool. This would satisfy Brian's baby punching fetish. You know? They put this toddler on the running man.
But then they bring his friends along. They've captured his, well, quote unquote, quote, friends from prison that, you know, helped him escape. They bring them along. So now there's three contestants on the Running Man. And the first person they go up against is Sub-Zero. Was it me, or was like Arnold's really ripped? Like Arnold's very well built. And every killer they went up against was kind of heavy set and overweight. Was that just me? Like, did you notice that? I'm like,
no. So Arnold was more ripped. I mean, this is, you know, coming off his Pumping Iron, coming off his Terminator stuff. Of course, he was a huge action star at this point. I think this movie would have been served well if it wasn't Arnold. But then again, maybe not at the time. Maybe that's what helped get it out to more people. But I think someone else playing the Ben Richards character would have done better, because you can't understand half the shit Arnold's saying. So he was stuck to those corny one-liners. I do have a couple hangups about this film, and that was one of them, is I didn't care for all the one-liners. It would have been cool if they were witty, but they just weren't. Sub-Zero, now Plain Zero. It's like, come on, you can't come up with anything better than that.
That's something like a 12-year-old would say.
Right, right. So he was jacked, though. He was ripped, and all of the stalkers, which are actually some of my favorite parts of the movie. No, I'm not talking about Leah Stalker from Pure Macabre. I'm talking about stalkers who actually take action instead of just watching you from the shadows and try to kill you. They were just the big, beefy pro wrestlers of the time. In fact, you had Jesse Ventura. Jesse the Body Ventura was in this as a retired stalker. So yeah, they were just like that bulky pro wrestler build to them.
You had Sub-Zero, and then you got Dynamo and Buzzsaw, which Buzzsaw was the chainsaw guy, and Dynamo was the electricity guy that sung opera, and he was a professional wrestler, it looks like.
And he died, actually, before the movie was released.
And then you had Jim Brown, who was a football player, and then you had Captain Freedom, who was Jesse the Body Ventura, you know, would later go on to be governor of Minnesota. He probably loves this movie now because he's big into like the conspiracy stuff, you know, so he's probably like loves this movie.
He's like, back in 87, this fucking movie I was in, it all came true. I was trying to tell you guys. Again, the stalkers were kind of my favorite part for a couple of reasons. It hit on a few different levels, especially in 1987. You had the pro wrestler element kind of there, you know, and actually I heard that this inspired American Gladiators, the TV show. But you also had kind of the video game. I felt it was like the stalkers were like the final boss. It was kind of like you were playing Mega Man. Do you remember Mega Man? And then you get to the end of the level and then you had to fight the boss of that level. And the levels were all themed for that boss. So it was really neat in that aspect. But I got to ask, Brian, who was your favorite stalker?
Probably Sub-Zero is the coolest one.
Pun intended. Yeah.
Probably Sub-Zero would be my coolest one. The Dynamo with his little car. I was like, God, he's bigger than the car. That's kind of weird. It just wasn't that cool. He shoots electricity.
Dynamo was my least favorite.
Fireball was fine. But again, he's got a fire extinguisher or a flamethrower. Yeah. So probably Sub-Zero and Buzzsaw would be the coolest. What about you?
I was waiting for you to ask. Buzzsaw. Hands down, Buzzsaw. He's got fucking chainsaws. He's driving the dirt bike around. He was just real intense. And then we're getting ready for a quick story time with Clint, because I know you love story time with Clint. There's the scene when Arnold and Buzzsaw are fighting, and Arnold is getting dragged around the back of Buzzsaw's dirt bike, and then he holds the cable tight, yanks Buzzsaw off his bike, and Buzzsaw's just laying there on the ground, and Arnold's slowly approaching him. He thinks he's knocked out, maybe he's dead, and then, of course, out of nowhere, Buzzsaw turns around, reaches up and grabs him, and they, you know, start fighting some more, and then the chainsaw battle part ensues. Story time with Clint. Back with my old haunted attraction, Corpse Barn, I ran into the waiting line one night with a chainsaw. I, for real, tripped on this like toe stepper or toe tripper or whatever, concrete, and landed flat on my stomach. My chainsaw goes flying. It fucking hurt. And I just laid there. And all the people in line were like laughing because they thought it was set up. And I just laid there. And then after a while, people were like, hey, oh, that was pretty good, buddy. And I just fucking laid there. And then after a while, people were like, hey, man, are you okay? You guessed it. I just laid there. And then finally, they started to walk up to me to kind of like, and they start nudging me. I think he's knocked out. Someone better get some help. And one guy reached down to kind of like pick me up, help get me up. And I fucking jumped up, grabbed the saw, fired it all in one motion, threw the whole crowd against the fucking wall. It was a thing of beauty. And that's what the scene in The Running Man makes me think of.
You missed that haunt, don't you?
It will forever have a very special place in my heart.
Soon enough, you can start maybe some of your shenanigans again.
Maybe.
Well, you had said something about The Running Man being video game feel. And actually, did you ever play that game, Smash TV? Or
no.
From 1990. It was actually inspired by The Running Man. American Gladiators, inspired by The Running Man. Someone had said that when they were pitching American Gladiators, they were showing clips of The Running Man. I was like, we're going to do all of this except for the murder part.
That's the best part. Well, and then talking about all the different elements that are present in this film, each quad, each stalker is kind of set up like a haunted, it had that haunted attraction feel. It was like you were laid out walking through a haunted attraction.
Yeah, and we had just screened the Slashers movie at the Capitol Theater in Burlington. And it had a little bit of The Running Man feel to it. The contestants chose to be on the show, and there were killers, and they had to survive 12 hours with the killers to win $1 million. And if they killed a stalker or a killer, they got more money. You know, they started out with like six of them. If there was only two left at the end, they got more money. A lot of people said it reminded them of 31, and I've never seen that movie, so I don't know the premise of that movie. I don't think there was money involved. But I would imagine a lot of people watched The Running Man in the 80s and came up with these kind of ideas for these movies.
No, I totally agree. I think that this, it laid the groundwork for a lot of this stuff. And yeah, 31 isn't like The Running Man as far as the game show part, but it is like 31 where you're stuck in the quad and you got to survive the killers and everything. You know, we were talking about the stalkers, and I think I said it, but Dynamo was my least favorite. The Knight Rider kit knockoff car. When they got to where they had to fight Fireball, did you see that Arnold was throwing a bunch of Tarmans at Fireball? All those green barrels, they look just like the barrels in Return of the Living Dead.
That's where they're at now.
They're in the quad. They're in the game zone.
What year did Return of the Living Dead come out?
1985.
Wouldn't that have been a cool, like, put the number for the army on the side of the barrels in The Running Man?
Well, it would have been great. And that's what actually The Running Man, like I say, is if you look and take the time to watch, it is filled with little Easter eggs and little details like that. There was a goof in this movie, I think. Well, first of all, like, I remember being a kid and getting excited the most about seeing the corpses, the winners, the three winners of last season. And you find out they're the losers because they didn't win shit. They just stuck them in a basement and let them rot and die. It was just neat seeing the corpses, very detailed. Again, some more of the horror element. But the goof was Fireball is stalking Ben Richards and Amber Mendez, who I think is the actress's name, if I'm correct. And he gets her. She comes across the three corpses, realizes that the game show never lets anybody win. And Fireball is explaining this. Yeah, these aren't last year's winners. They're last year's losers. And Arnold comes in. He kills Fireball. And then you see that the audience is watching it. And I'm like, wait a minute. So they just let the world know that no one really won, that they lost. I think that was kind of like, as far as story goes, they goofed.
So maybe they fixed it somehow, censored it somehow, where you didn't see that first part, and then you see the part where Arnold kills him.
Yeah, maybe you were just supposed to believe that because it was all propaganda TV, so they only saw what you wanted them to see. And the whole reason that, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Ben Richards character was in the show is because In the very beginning of the movie, it opens up and he worked for the military and they were going to bomb a food riot where poor people were just trying to get themselves food in the streets. In reality, the reality of the movie, he wasn't going to fire on innocent, unarmed civilians just trying to get food, but the government said, no, you're going to do it. And then, of course, they detained him. They blew everybody up and then they framed him to make it look like he did it. Now he's the butcher of Bakersfield, which is why he was in prison and on the show.
Yeah, that's an interesting, as you get into the movie, you find out that even though he didn't, it looks like they still shot the shit out of everybody and burned people and blew shit up. The government still like went along with, you know, this mass killing of people.
Did you recognize the character Mick, the leader of the resistance? He was the old guy. He had the old makeup on.
No, I did not.
So I didn't realize this, and this is one of my fun facts that I learned from Internet Movie Database. He is played by drummer Mick Fleetwood of the supergroup Fleetwood Mac. So this is for all you Fleetwood Mac fans. His compatriot in the movie, a character named Stevie, Stevie Nicks, Fleetwood Mac, is played by Dweezil Zappa, the son of legendary musician Frank Zappa, and is obviously homage to Stevie Nicks of Fleetwood Mac. He had some rock royalty in this film as well.
Only in the 80s, right?
Only in the 80s could all of this stuff come together and be so much fun and blend so well. You got pro wrestlers, you got actual game show hosts, you got action stars, you got music stars, you've got horror, you've got sci-fi, you got everything. Everything is in the, you even have Han Solo from Star Wars is in this movie.
Where at?
So at the end, after Arnold and Amber, is it Amber Mendez? Am I saying this all right? What?
I thought Amber Mendez was the...
Yeah, I'm saying it wrong. Right. No, that's Amber Heard.
Is that her name in the movie?
I can't remember. I just watched it last night, but I'm getting old too.
Amber Mendez is her name in the movie, yes.
Oh, okay, good. Whew, I feel better. Brain cells are still firing. After Ben Richards and Amber Mendez escape from the game zone, if you haven't seen this movie, I'm probably not making sense. The resistance lives underground and they're trying to block the satellite link of the networks so they can override the propaganda TV and let the world know the truth about what's going on, because the world is kind of a slave to what they see. The resistance gets her all cleaned up and she's got on the blue shirt, she's got on the black vest, and she's got a gun. It looks just like Han Solo's ray gun. And they're running around blasting people, storming the studio. Of course, we get the final showdown between Arnold and Jack Killian. Arnold sends Jack down the tunnel in the speed racer thing, and he flies into a wall and blows up.
But Arnold was dead. Ben was dead. He was killed by Captain Freedom.
All propaganda. So one thing that was not propaganda, another little fun fact, if you're interested and you're a fan of 80s pop music, this even had Paula Abdul in it, because all of the dancers on the game show, The Running Man, a lot of them were, at the time, I believe she was, or she had just finished being a Laker girl. And of course, around 87, that was the start of her musical career, and everything in the 80s pop had these huge dance numbers. So she choreographed Paula Abdul. This was their first big choreographing gig, choreographed all of the dancers on the show.
What'd you think of the song at the end? I know you're, I was like, I don't know if he's going to like this one or not.
It fit because it was the 80s and it fit in the moment of Arnold and Amber Mendez. They win in the end. They overtake, you know, the government. They show the world the truth. And then they kind of had this like sexual tension, this love-hate relationship. And they finally they kiss, they hope, embrace. And that part was great. And so the song fit that moment fine. But that's not the song to close the movie out to, especially since earlier on in my notes, the reason I referenced John Carpenter is this had a John Carpenter feel, Escape from New York kind of feel to it. It had a lot of that great 80s synth music that sounded like something Carpenter would have composed. And then to have, which I have on my playlist that I listen to randomly, people are like, what are you listening to? And I'm like, the score from The Running Man. The fuck are you listening to? Anyway, and then it ends with that 80s, and then they're together, love song or whatever it is. And it's like, what? But so back in my notes, I watched the credits, and then I did a little research and found out that Alan Howarth, was involved in the composing of the score of the movie. And of course, Alan is synonymous with John Carpenter, John Carpenter Films. He was at Flashback last year. He's going to be at Flashback again this year. That dude has been involved in some major movies as far as musical composition.
If you love soundtracks and you're an autograph person, grab a soundtrack and have him autograph it. Did you get one of his autographs last year?
I did not, but I'm going to this year.
I am too, because our old co-host Jason did. I think he got two or three. And he actually signs it, and then he puts some music notes on it.
Yeah, he'll put bars from that song.
So I'm like, oh, hell yeah. I'm definitely getting an autograph like that.
Which I remember looking at Jason, and I said, you know, you don't know shit about music. I don't really know enough to be able to read bars. I was like, I wonder if he's actually putting down or if he's just like scribbling music notes going, no, they'll think this is part of the song.
Yeah.
No, I think that guy's a musical genius, so it's probably legit, and it is very cool.
And this year he's doing the soundtrack to Halloween 3 at the show?
I think so. I can't remember.
Well, that'd be fun.
Yeah, he's going to be performing that. I might take drugs again and go watch that.
Close the booth down. We'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah. I'll put up the honor system sign. So you're right. I'm glad that you picked up on that. I did not enjoy the song at the end. It fit that moment, but it wasn't the right tune to carry the movie out with. It was complete. Against the grain of everything about the movie. I don't know if you've ever did you watch all the credits?
I watched part of them.
Towards the very, very end of the credits, the announcer for The Running Man comes on and says this.
The Running Man has been brought to you by Breakaway Paramilitary Uniforms, Ortho Pure Procreation Pills, and Cadre Cola. It hits the spot. Promotional considerations paid for by Kelton Flamethrowers, Wainwright Electrical Launchers, and Hammond and Gates Chainsaws. Damon Gillian's Wardrobe by Chez Antoine, 19th century craftsmanship for the 21st century man. Cadre Trooper and Studio Guard sidearms provided by Colchester, the pistol of patriots. Remember, tickets for the ICS Studio Tour are always available for Class A citizens in good standing. If you'd like to be a contestant on The Running Man, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to ICS Talent Hunt, care of your local affiliate, and then go out and do something really despicable. I'm Phil Hilton. Good night, and take care.
So that was kind of neat to have that inserted in there.
Some of my favorite stuff was with Richard Dawson, and what I read of him or what I read about the movie is a lot of people, they didn't hate the movie, but they didn't love the movie critics-wise. But everybody said that this was Richard Dawson found his perfect character to play.
I mean, it's what he did for 30 years, 40 years, whatever, prior to that. How it added so much authenticity to the movie.
Well, yeah, because he was on Hogan's Heroes, and then he was on The Match Game. He was a guest on that, and then he was the original host of Family Feud. So, yeah, he knows how to announce a TV show.
I think Brian and I are both big fans of this movie, and so we might not have done a good job to people listening who haven't seen it, which, again, like Brian said earlier in the episode, where the fuck have you been? Because we're just excited. We're giddy. Like, oh, this part was cool. This part was cool. If you love 80s action, if you love 80s horror, 80s synth music, if you love dystopian futures, if you love pro wrestling, if you love pop culture, if you love all of this stuff tied together, do yourself a favor. Go watch this movie. I would actually implore you to watch this before the remake. I usually tell people, like Brian told me the other day, he hasn't seen The Crow. And he says, I'm afraid to watch it before I watch the remake. And on that one, I said, yeah, watch the remake first so you can give it a chance. Because if you watch the original, then you watch the remake, you're going to be like, fuck this remake. But The Running Man, A, it's available now. And B, it's so timely and relevant to things that we deal with today. Do yourself a favor, watch it now.
Well, it's one of those weird movies that didn't do well at the box office. I mean, it made some money. Critics didn't really care for it. Doesn't have like a huge Rotten Tomatoes number. I think it was like 62% or something like that. But it's had 42 releases on physical media. VHS, VHS, DVD, DVD, special features, 4K. For these movies that don't seem to have this huge following, they always end up showing up on physical media and they must sell well because they keep making them.
And if you're looking to watch it right now for free, the only place I found it for free at this moment is Pluto TV.
Yep, Pluto TV. And you get commercials, but you get one commercial in the show, The Climbing, for dollars. And that was fun.
Oh, I love it. You know, speaking of free, our ratings are usually free. We don't charge anybody for them. You think we should rate it?
Oh, let's rate it. I'm going to go 8 out of 10. I'm not going to give you a bunch of whys or what's or where's. 8 out of 10, Richard Dawson herpes tests. Did you know about this?
No, what the fuck are you talking about?
So when Richard Dawson was the original announcer for the Family Feud, he'd kiss everybody.
Right.
And so participants of the show would get herpes tests afterwards because he'd kiss everybody. He'd kiss everybody. Like on the lips. you know, mostly the women, but so people would like go home and get tested or get tested after the show for herpes.
When you started saying that, I thought you were going to say like he required them to have herpes tests. Like, can I kiss Brian? Okay. He passed the test.
I mean, maybe. Yeah.
That's funny. I'm going nine out of 10 cheesy Arnold one-liners. This movie's perfection, in my opinion. I could repeat all this stuff. I would go 10 out of 10. But the reason I said Arnold one-liners is the really cheesy, lackluster one-liners, the against the grain exit song, and the one fireball thing that it's a gray area if it's a goof or not, where he's explaining about the three winners who are actually losers, I thought took away from the perfection of this movie.
And it's, what, an hour and 41 minutes? And it does not feel like that long.
No, it's not long. It's paced well. It's balanced. It's well acted. Watch the movie. 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10. 8 out of 10. 9 out of 10. Pretty strong. We're on a good roll here with Late Night with the Devil and Running Man.
What are we covering next? I'll tell you what. I'll give you a prediction of
how good it's going to continue to go. Right.
Hold on. No, I'm going to look here. Let's see here. We talk about pulling back the curtain. Well, pulling back the curtain, we typically kind of map out what we're going to do for movies for the most part, and it changes quite a bit. We give ourselves a little roadmap. Ooh, next one's going to be a toss-up.
What's next?
Well, don't hold us to it, because again, things change, but I do believe that the next feature episode after you hear this one, Leah Stalker's coming back on, and she is going to join us, and we're going to discuss one of her favorite early introductions into horror, which is Dolls from, I think that's like 91, 89, 92, something like that. I've never seen it.
Oh, I've seen it.
Ooh, I heard the tone in his voice. But if we stay true to our lineup in the movie after that, it's 10 out of 10 right now. It's 100 out of 100. It is my all-time favorite horror film of all time.
Dolls is actually from 1987, so the same year as Running Man. Yeah, we're just gonna live in 87 for a couple episodes.
Yeah, 87 is cool. I mean, we're still watching TV right now. You know, we went from the late night stuff to the game show. I think though that we should probably take it back to the radio, because this is kind of radio, right? You can't see us. You guys are lucky you can't see us. Well, at least that you can't see Brian. And we should take it to our podcast network, the PFPN.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
So now that we've heard from our podcast network, it's time for Horror History. This Day in Horror, Horror History, whatever you want to call it this episode.
A date which will live in infamy.
Covering the dates April 28th through May 11th. And there was, goddamn, April to May. Sounds like it's going to be better this year, according to Bloody Disgusting in the news, than it's been in a long time. And on April 29th, 1951, you get The Thing from Another World. It gave us The Thing. And they're both good movies. 1964, you get Mothra vs. Godzilla. 1983, Something Wicked This Way Comes.
I still have not seen that movie.
I haven't either. And it's one of those gateway horror that everybody in the 80s kind of grew up on.
And it's hard to find. I've tried to find it on streaming and I can't.
And then in 1988, an Easter classic, Critters 2, The Main Course.
The only reason it's an Easter classic is because it takes place during Easter. That movie's so bad. I love the first one.
May 1st, you get Friday the 13th, Part 2 in 1981, Graduation Day in 1981, and Creepshow 2. In 1987.
Do you know what else the world got on May 1st in 2007?
What's that?
My oldest daughter.
Oh.
Here's a little fun fact about my oldest daughter. She was born on 5-1 of 07. Our area code is 517.
Oh.
Now you know.
And she scares the shit out of your wallet buying them expensive records.
Jesus Christ, buying the expense of everything. She's my expensive daughter. Yeah.
And then on May 8th, 1958, you get Horror of Dracula. 1981, this is important, The Burning.
It's important to the show.
Yeah, I know you didn't care for the movie, but yeah, it was the first episode I think you were a guest on.
I was a guest on, yeah.
And then in 1996, you get Urban Legend.
And then kind of like Richard Dawson's herpes, I just would never leave.
Yeah, yeah. 1996, you get Urban Legend. May 9th, you get Friday 13th, the original in 1980. And I try to stay away from the days that there's not much going on, but you can't not talk about Friday 13th. Spawned 12 movies and a TV show and 42 McFarlane figures and, you know, all that stuff. Right. I think the only thing that there's more McFarlane figures of than Jason Voorhees is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, NECA and Turtles. Oh, my God. Hey, so I almost covered in the news. I don't know if you saw this. I think I shared to they're coming out with The Last Ronin. It's going to be an R-rated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And it'll probably be really good.
I agree.
Is it a graphic novel that it's based on?
I don't know if it's a graphic novel or if it's a comic series. But regardless, it's based off something from the comic world.
And then May 10th, this is the funnest one of the group just because of the name. In 1989, Chopper Chicks in Zombie Town. I've never seen it, but it sounds like it'd be fun.
I could be wrong, but I want to say that that's a Michigan-made film. I'm going to have to look that up. Someone email us at ilikeaspookypod@gmail.com. We are aficionados, but we're not that fucking smart. And there was a movie that Tommy's last name right now, but she heads Motor City Nightmares and has branched off and now runs another one in Colorado. And she started out making films, and I swear that was her movie, and it was a Michigan-made film.
And then in 2002, you get Dog Soldiers, which I love Dog Soldiers. That's a fun movie. Seen that one?
I have not, but this list sounds pretty good. You were like, not a lot going on. No, it sounded pretty good.
It sounds all right.
Anything with Creepshow in it is great.
Well, yeah, Creepshow too. I mean, I think that's the better of the two. If you have, I don't know.
That's fucking blasphemy, but you know, okay. Everybody's entitled to their opinion.
You like the first one better?
Absolutely. Nothing wrong with the second one, but the first one is legendary.
I guess maybe the second one just floats around all the time. You don't really see much of the first one.
It's just because it's got a part two next to it. That's why you love it better. I mean, face facts.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the fuck's going on, do you?
No.
So part of the spooky crew will be set up for the Spring Scenic Drive down here in Illinois. We're going to set up in a little town called McQuan that nobody's ever heard of. And we're going to sell some shit. Probably give some buttons away and some stickers and sell some t-shirts, hopefully, and some scary movies and some other stuff. It's a Saturday and Sunday, May 4th and 5th. I think that's all I have. You got anything?
No, I got the oldest birthday, and it's tennis season. So, see, this year, obviously, because of the Nugget and the Stagecoach stuff, I specifically cut back in all the shows that I take inkmirrors.com to. But something I learned over the past couple of years is there are a lot of great cons. There's a lot of great shows going on right now. Creature Feature Weekend just happened in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I was there last year. I had a good time. Our friend Jim Krutt is, you know, there again. He's from that area. You got Living Dead Weekend coming up at Monroeville Mall here pretty soon. They just had a Horror Hound in Cincy. A lot of great shows, and I know I'm missing. I'm just kind of going over a few of them, but I learned the last couple of years not to book any shows this time of year, because if you have kids in school, especially junior high school, spring is just insane. I got theater. I got tennis. You got the end of the year trips. Even in grade school, they had the park trips and the zoo trips. And there's just always so much going on domestically that it was always such a trying to put a round peg into a square hole to fit my stuff in. So because of that, no, I've got nothing.
Yeah, we're heading to Springfield, Illinois area in a couple weeks for the state tumbling meet. So that's a weekend that we'll be doing that all weekend.
I don't know why they jam everything into the spring.
And then they throw a bunch of shows in there, too. And you're like, I want to go to this. I want to go. And you're like, yeah, can't. Which is fine. I have plenty of movies to watch. By next episode, I'll probably have more to watch.
Yeah, there'll be more coming from all of your companies that you support.
The other thing that's going on is I'm going to go hang out with our friends from the Brett and Tony Ash and Abe crew and possibly do a little part in a movie that might be coming out.
They're going to invite you back to be a part of another movie?
I know, dummies.
They're going to be like, okay, you're going to be a background actor. Now turn around because we don't want to see your face. We just want your shoulders and maybe the lower half of the back of your head.
Put a hat on that. The sun's shining from your bald head into the end of the camera. Put a hat on, would you?
It's going to be like Charlie Brown. They're like, Brian, you'll be the perfect model for our pumpkin.
Yeah.
No, that's really cool. I'm just busting your balls. That's cool. That's cool. Do you know what it's going to be about?
A giant spider killing people, eating people.
Can't go wrong with that.
No, we went and actually visited the big spider yesterday. And Finley would get close, but not too close. She was like looking. She's like, I'm just looking at it. I was like, you want to take a picture with it? And she's like, no, I'm just looking at it. Well, they know where to find us by now, right?
They who? The spiders?
Them too. But yeah, the people that listen to the show.
Everywhere. We're fucking everywhere.
We're like spiders crawling your mouth when you're sleeping. That would be next. The government doesn't even need TV. It's like a radio signal into your brain, and they just play this show, and it drives people insane, and then they want to be on The Running Man because they can't take it anymore.
You know, this is kind of a short episode. Do you want a very quick another story time with Clint?
Yeah.
You can tell me no, and I'll shut up.
We always got time for story time with Clint.
Story time with Clint. You're talking about eating spiders. Okay. In my early 20s, I moved back home for, I don't know, like 8 months or something like that. Anyway, I remember I'm in my bedroom and it was nighttime and I think I'd been out drinking and I came home and I had a glass of Pepsi sitting next to my bed. I remember I woke up in the middle of the night and I was just thirsty as all hell. So I grab the glass of Pepsi, I take a swig of it. And as I'm gulping this down, I feel something long and slimy climb into my fucking mouth. And I was like, just that immediate, I dropped the glass, it broke. I took the thing out, I pulled it, I threw it against the wall. In my bedroom there was a little half bath. So I hit the wall in the half bath and I get up and I turn the light on and I'm all disoriented. And I look, it was a fucking silverfish, you know, like a millipede, a centipede, whatever you want to call them. And it crawled into my Pepsi and I didn't know it. And I had been drinking and not feeling that well. So I, you know, almost threw up all over the place. I got to come up with like a little song for story time with Clint.
Instead of the news, you could just do story time with Clint.
I've got stories.
Well, join us next time on the I Like It Spooky Horror podcast for more story time with Clint.
Ba-dum-bum-bum-ba-dum.
We're going to have better music than The Running Man did when it goes out.
Right, yeah. Because I love you now. Whatever the fuck it was. I don't know. Whew.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, subscribe, please. Please? So you can hear all my stories. Till next time.
What's wrong with you, man? Show some fucking respect for the dead, will ya?